Welcome to The New Exchange, a podcast series that explores how everyone has a story to tell. My name is Ken Grandpierre, and hand on heart, this just might be the most relaxing episode of the season. Some of you listening right now will be surprised that today's guest would even need an introduction, but if those people can give me a moment, I would love to educate the uninitiated. Tamino is a Belgian-Egyptian singer-songwriter that is defying all the odds. His music is strikingly intimate, yet cinematic, elusive, and yet somehow personal. His first album, Amir, was a near-instant hit worldwide, bringing Tamino a wave of success that went beyond his wildest dreams. The album brought about multiple sold-out concerts around the world, numerous MIA Awards, the Belgian equivalent of a Grammy, and oh right, Colin Greenwood of Radiohead loves him so much that he asked to be in Tamino's live band. It doesn't get more life-changing than that. I mean, holy shit. And yet, in a lot of ways, the sheer idea of an artist like Tamino existing in our modern time is shocking, let alone the success that he's amassed. In a time where social media dominates many lives, with attention spans growing shorter each year, Tamino honestly exists as a bit of an anomaly. His art demands that you pay attention. His art demands that you actually sit down to take it all in. Seeing the world respond to that has been a beautiful thing. But what happens next? Where do you go after you achieve such shocking success early on? Well, that's what today's podcast is all about. I first chatted with him nearly 4 years ago, and on this new episode, we kind of rethread some of those things that we talked about in that first conversation, along with the thoughts and the emotions that went into his exceptional second album, Sahar, which is out now. Before we get into it, I should mention that Tamino will be touring Europe for the next few weeks, starting on November 21st in Paris and ending on December 7th in Belgium. Most of those dates are already sold out, but don't worry, he'll also be touring Europe again early next year, starting on February 7th in Stockholm. Be sure to visit taminomusic.com for tour dates. Remember to subscribe on the app that you're listening to this on and to also rate and leave a review over on Apple Podcasts. Those ratings help us independent creatives in a big way, so if you like what you hear, do let me know about it. This is The New Exchange with Tamino. Enjoy. Mahaban, Tamino. It is absolutely fantastic to be chatting with you again.
Good to see you, man.
Yeah. How have you been doing, like, these last couple weeks? I mean, talk about a wildly busy time for you, yeah?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so the album's coming out this month, and I'm actually leaving on the North American solo tour Wednesday. So they basically made sure all the promo, most of the promo was done before the tour. So yeah, a lot of, you know, talking about music, I guess.
Yeah, excavating your feelings and that.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I'll be at the second night in Brooklyn. And I mean, how special is it, like, when you come here now, you have to do two nights? That's kind of wicked, isn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy. I don't know, just the whole North American tour is honestly something I've been looking forward to for a long time. I mean, we were on tour in 2020 in the States, and then of course something made us go home. Yeah, anyway, like, I always enjoy playing there, and it's this super, it's a bit of an adventure, you know, because you're touring in a country that basically every city feels like a separate country in a way, so spread out. And it's yeah, and in New York for sure. I mean, I love playing there. I love spending time there. I spend a lot of time there in July, actually.
Yeah, it's a really special city in that. And, you know, I feel a lot of gratitude that I get to be talking to you now, because I always find that in-between period between albums is something that's so significant and important. And, like, Amir brought you all over the world, and at a pace that would give, you know, many people whiplash. I wonder, what feelings and thoughts come to your mind when you think back to how you felt in 2020, you know, before the world shut down, when you were still going at that pace? Do you feel like you had a chance to reflect on the traveling that you got to do?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was basically when we got home, in March 2020, it was the first time I actually felt like I had the space to reflect on everything that happened, you know. My life changed so drastically in such a short amount of time. I mean, when we released Habibi, when I was like 20 or something, yeah, suddenly my life went from being a music student in Amsterdam, playing in a lot of pubs, you know, to having a career basically, and having to play way bigger shows and like you mentioned, in many places. So that was a lot to adapt to, and it was also, I mean, I'm like, of course, immensely grateful for it, and I feel like as an artist, you're always a bit in a position where you cannot really complain, because in the end, that's what you want as an artist, is that your work is appreciated and that you get to do all that stuff and get all those chances. So what I did basically was just go, like take every chance that was given, and not think about it too much. And but what happens when you do that is that you just sort of, you focus on this one thing, and you have a sort of a tunnel vision. You mature quite a lot in this one area of life, but then all the other things are sort of neglected, you know. And I was definitely confronted with that when I got home again, and when there was nothing but, yeah, that home environment and sort of nothing much going on outside of that, you know. So
it's funny you bring that up. I was talking about this with a friend a few days ago. When I used to tour, I used to like work like temp office jobs here in New York, and I was describing to my friend how I realized a weird phenomenon where I'd be on the road for like a week or two, and then I'd go back to this office job. And even if I had been there prior, it was almost like having my first day again, because my brain was trying to figure out how things even worked. And it could be fun once or twice, but when it happens again and again, it just feels, you feel almost like suspended in animation in a way.
It's the perfect description. It's funny because I don't meet that many people that can relate to that feeling, you know. So it's cool that you mentioned that you have experienced that as well, because it's really a weird thing where you're not really able to land. I feel, even in, like you said, even when you are at home for some time, it's this strange thing, you know. Also, the people that are close to you at home, they of course they don't really know what you've been doing. You know, so like they know, he's been on tour, but it's like their life just went on at home. And but anyway, it's like now I feel like I'm complaining already a bit too much. Well, actually, I'm very much looking forward to touring again. And also, I feel like I'm very grateful for the time at home now, because I feel like I've laid a stronger foundation in terms of friendships and also feeling connected to Antwerp. I don't know, I think I feel more of a base now, and I'm going into the world again with more security and more strength in a way.
No, I appreciate you sharing that, because I think your music in itself is very human and has a lot of, like, you know, human themes in it. But I feel you sharing this about your life kind of showcases more of that humanity, and it adds dimension, where I think a lot of people, like, something I love about talking to musicians is that I think there's a lot of little ways people who aren't even musicians can relate. Like, someone who travels for business and is rarely home and is working like an office job type of thing, it's a totally different life, but they could definitely relate to what we're discussing as well, I'm sure.
I'm sure, yeah.
I was going to say I have a big question to ask. I have several big questions, but the next thing I'm going to ask you, it's going to be in parts. The second part is going to come later in this talk, but I want to explore the first part with you. I have to be honest, I was surprised when there was a new album that was announced because I was happy as a fan of your music. But it's very funny. Your debut album is one of the rare instances to me in terms of a body of work where I feel like you could have released that and never release another piece of music again. And it could exist because of how definitive it felt in regards to how you're expressing yourself. And I think in the elusive nature of it, it almost wouldn't have been surprising if you would have disappeared. It almost feels like it would have been like, I said everything I needed to say. That's what that album feels. So I wonder, did it ever feel that way for you after crafting Amir? Like, did it ever seem questionable whether or not you would make another album?
Well, first of all, that's like way too big of a compliment for me to be able to accept that. Honestly, like it never really felt like that to me. It was very much in my mind always a first album, but with songs for sure that meant and still mean a lot to me. I guess I did know that it would take a long time to make something new. I guess I have a suspicion that it might always be the case with me, like, because it's just I need space to create. I need to be solitary as well to write new songs. I mean, when I'm in a creative state of mind, but I also need to be able to live a little and to, yeah. And that first album, it's like a lot of first experiences that are, I guess, captured in that album. A lot of sort of being a teenager sort of, but also, I don't know. I can summarize it very shortly. It's like, I don't, for me, it never felt like a definitive work, but that's, I think that's always the case with, just from watching so many interviews of some of my favorite artists, and just because of having felt that so many times, with writing songs, that you often hear that when you finish something, there's a sense of pride, of course, because you make something that you're proud of, otherwise you wouldn't release it. But there's also a sense of disappointment, you know, where I guess a song or an album can never fully meet your expectations as an artist. And I saw something very beautiful, actually. So I'm reading Karl Ove Knausgaard's My Struggle series right now, and I saw like an interview with him where he talks about pessimism, and I think he mentions something about art, where art is basically all art is failure in a way. It's sort of what you see with art is that it's what you see of an artist is always it's never definitive. It's always sort of in that artist's mind, it will always be some sort of a failure. And that's always what drives you forward as well. So it's very important to release stuff, to show stuff to the world, because that's really what drives you forward as an artist, I think, because it's like this feeling of, I can do better. And honestly, like with that first album, quite soon after I released it, that sense of disappointment already arose, and I'm sure it will be the same with this album, and I'm sure in, like, hopefully in 40 years when I'm still producing music, I'll say the same thing with the album that I will have produced by then. It's like, I think it's this cyclical thing that moves you forward, and each work you release sort of creates this new burst of creative energy that because you want to sort of make a reaction, I guess, to what you've just released.
First, thank you for such a thoughtful answer. Truly, It's fascinating that you brought up Carl and those books, because there was a period of my life where I couldn't hang out with friends and they not bring them up. And there was like a while in my life where that was the case. I haven't heard of them in a while, but I remember I think they're on my like Amazon wish list still from like years back. I should really delve into them. They seem very fascinating.
So you read them at some point?
No, I haven't yet. I mean, I need to buy them to do it. Yeah, I'm familiar with the works though, and familiar with his philosophies. And something I think is really beautiful about what you said there is that, I mean, is it, because, you know, when you reacted to what I said and you took it as a compliment, is it weird for you that people can have a different perception of your work than you yourself as the creator? Or I guess there's this understanding that that's just always going to be the relationship in a way, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's it's not weird to me. It's like, it's something that I guess was weird to me rather before I released my own music, then I in the role of the listener, I thought probably I can't remember, for example, finding it strange that a band wouldn't play a song like one of their biggest songs anymore. You know, like I can remember really not understanding that as a fan of that band. And now I, of course, have grown more understanding of that. Yeah, just because I've felt what it's like to have released something and then having to represent that work for years on end, and sort of sometimes it's hard to keep sort of believing in it, I guess, you know, and also to be able to sing a song, I guess in some way you have to be able to still feel that. And on some nights you might not feel a particular song as much as you would do on other occasions. And then sometimes it can feel like you're acting a bit instead of experiencing the music. And that's not really a state of mind I want to be in when I'm on stage, because I feel like acting, I mean, in a way, parts of it is acting for sure. Like it would be an illusion to believe that every night you feel those songs as much.
I mean, I remember when we met that first time, and you also did a cover at Studio Brussels of Arctic Monkeys. We chatted about them a bit, and fun enough, I remember a couple years ago, they said that in an interview, because they kind of get stuff about like how they don't play songs off their first album anymore, and obviously they have like 7 albums to pull from, but they were saying like how when they, I think the exact quote was that when they play some songs off the first album, they feel like caricatures, like they don't feel like they're being themselves.
That's something that you don't want to feel like you're covering yourself.
Yes, you know? Exactly.
Yeah.
Before we talk about the new album, I did want to talk about expectations a bit, and I think this kind of ties back to what you were saying about needing some distance and space between projects. Because when I heard that, what kind of came into my mind was that, and it's part of what I enjoy about your music so much, is that I feel like you never want to repeat yourself sonically and lyrically. I don't feel like creatively you think I need to have this match up to something I did before. And I think what's interesting is that everyone wants an audience, but it's what you do with that audience that speaks volumes. And part of the success of that first album was how people appreciated how you took these pre-existing kind of textures of like different of your culture and modernized them in a way, essentially crafting a whole new sound. So tell me, I know this is like almost a very aggressive question, but how important, when you went in to make this new album, how important do you feel it was to block out any expectations what people had it was going to be?
Well, no, it's not an aggressive question at all. It's a good one. I feel like it's, well, first of all, I wasn't really connected, I guess, to much of the outside world. So first thing I did was delete Instagram off my phone. So So yeah, it was such a good. I mean, of course, I didn't delete my account, but I deleted it. The app just for my phone. I wasn't really reading the news all that much either. I mean, that has nothing to do with expectations or whatever, but just I was really in my own cocoon for a long time, which was lovely, honestly. And I really felt like a sense of community and with my friends and my neighbors. And yeah, it was special time, honestly. So in terms of expectations and all that, I wasn't even talking about it with friends, and I wasn't even having those conversations. And also it felt like at that time, like the world didn't really care about music, which was hard at times because it made me sort of question my whole profession and my whole passion. Like, oh, wait, but the world can, like, it looks like the world can just sort of doesn't need it from one moment to the other. Suddenly it's like, it's not a part of culture anymore, but it's of course, it was a big illusion because that's never been the case. It was just like this huge other thing that just gained all the attention and sort of pushed away all the rest, which was quite logical. So I really felt like there were no expectations whatsoever, because just it wasn't there. No one was talking about music in general. Normally, for example, now that you can go to a pub again and sort of have a drink with friends, or yeah, now you can do that and sort of talk about the new music you've discovered, or yeah, there's actual new music being released, because for a long time there wasn't, and B, yeah, I mean, just the fact that you can come together with a lot of people that just those conversations, they happen in situations like that. So yeah, I really, it might sound like almost ridiculous, but I wasn't thinking about any of that. Also because people really left me alone, you know, like my label or my managers, they all left me alone. There was no point in sort of rushing it because we knew we would only release something when we would be able to play live again as well. So, yeah.
I really want to point out in everything you're saying, and obviously it's tied to the context of the pandemic, because that's a very accentuating circumstance where it's one of the rare occurrences where we're all experiencing something at once. And it's interesting. I feel it's good at times to bring it up, because how rare is it to have an experience that you had, that I had, and someone listening had, and we could all relate. But In reference to what you just said there, like, can we point out, you released an album. It was critically acclaimed. You got to travel the world. It became your life. And then there's a clear idea that a second will eventually happen. And you didn't have to feel pressure in between. I mean, obviously, like we said, there's circumstance, but that never happens. Like, that's the, like, it's wild.
Yeah, it's almost like I am the mastermind behind. Like, okay, now I'm sick of touring. I invent this virus and I can go.
I feel like there's an artist or two who's listening who are probably like, oh, lucky guy. But it's not all like that. We're just being silly. But just like how, like, that is crazy what you just said.
It's absolutely true, because I know a lot of artists that had actually just released something. So, and they were, of course, for them, it was a huge disadvantage, of course, not being able to tour and all that. So I realized that I was very, very lucky with the timing of it. In the end, we only had to cancel 14 shows, which is not a lot compared to, you know, others. So yeah, I'm that's why, like, for me personally, it was a very, very transformative time, and I'm very, very grateful to have had it. I must say that without it, I don't consider this album a lockdown record, And I also think I would have taken about the same amount of time. Of course, you never know. I mean, but it's just that I think I would have taken the same amount of time, and also the work process would have been very similar, because I spend that much time on my own anyway. But yeah, I guess just the big difference was from outside, there was no pressure, sort of.
That's beautiful. You mentioned getting to feel reconnected with Antwerp, which is a beautiful place. I deeply love Belgium as well. I'm curious if you found yourself able to venture into other places. I mean, when we talked last, something that was really beautiful was that I think it was right before you were about to go to Egypt. And there's obviously the video for Indigo Night, which is really special. And did you get to go back or anywhere else in the world during this, like the last 2-3 years?
Not really, honestly. I really spent a lot of time just in Antwerp. I mean, I went to France probably like once or twice. But then only very recently I went to New York in July for a couple of weeks. That was it. I went to Italy. Morocco. I went to Morocco in last year, I think.
That's on the top of my list, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, of places I want to see. When I was 18, I went to art school, and I remember one of my professors had one of those big atlas books of, like, you know, the world. Mm-hmm. And they had pictures of Morocco in there, and I still remember this very vividly, being 18 years old and thinking, like, what is that? Like, thinking it wasn't on Earth, like thinking it was like almost like an alien place, because it looked so different. And I always had in mind that I want to go there someday to see it.
You should. And if you go, you should go to Essaouira. It's this beautiful, it's an old pirate village, basically. And so it has this old city wall. Now it's like a fisherman's village, but it's just beautiful. It's beautiful. And if you surf, it's a great place to surf as well. Yeah, it's cool.
I appreciate the recommendation. I feel very lucky that I'm recording this, and that way I can refer back to it later. I'm going to ask you now, we are going to talk about specific songs, but before we do, I wanted to ask the part two of that question that I mentioned earlier. And it kind of harkens a little bit back to that talk that we had a couple years ago, because I feel like what I learned from you in that sense, I had this assumption, but from talking to you, I realized it, is that you're someone who writes, but it's not always for a purpose. It's not always with the idea that this thing I'm writing is going to go to something. So I wonder, when you consider that, was there a moment or a series of moments where you realized you were indeed writing for a new album?
With like an actual new album in mind? Yeah, I mean, some songs, I mean, of course, the moment I started writing, I was already aware that I had to make a new album. So, but they weren't really, I wasn't writing purposefully in the sense that I knew, I need, let's say, for example, I need an up-tempo song, or I need a, you know, I wasn't thinking in the track lists. I wasn't really there. Yeah, and also I've mentioned that a lot of times. Like I'm not sure I'm able to start with a concept. I think I usually start with just messing around on an instrument and sort of until there are chords or a melody or something that moves me, and from there I guess a song emerges. Yeah, no, I don't really know when I started to see the album forming. I think I wrote about in between 30 or 40 songs, and just a couple of them were just, yeah, presented themselves in a way that just sticked more, I guess, like, or it stuck more to my mind. Like, yeah, I don't know.
You know, in relation to what you're saying there, I feel like in the context of how albums tend to be made, it's interesting how in the process, sometimes a song can function as almost like a guide, or like it might steer things in different directions. And when I heard The First Disciple for the first time, I kind of felt like it had that sensibility to it. Like, it's such a striking song to listen to for the first time. And it's one of those songs that I feel like I notice something new every time I listen to it. Like, do you feel like this was kind of important in the process for you when you were making the album?
I'm very happy you say that. It's also a song that I myself find new things in every time I play it or listen to it. Yeah, it's because I think the themes are there. There's more to it than I had first thought, and it's like, I don't know. It's a song that surprises me. That keeps on surprising me. But I'm not sure if it was important. I'm not sure I knew which things were important to me in the making of the album. Like, I'm not sure if I ever have that. Like, this is important to me. It's really more about, like you say, a song can be a guide. So it's more about listening to the song and you feel when a recording is right or not.
That's beautiful. And like, you know, in relation to The First Disciple, because there was something I really wanted to ask in regards to that song specifically. I was re-listening to it a couple of days ago, and I had a moment where, like, I could tell how personal it was the first time I heard it, but I feel like that sentiment grows every time I revisit it. And I know it's such a personal thing to ask, but who are you singing to on that song? I feel like it's impossible to not feel that these words aren't pointed towards either a person or a group. Or am I projecting at all? Or is there anything close to that?
I mean, no. I mean, there is no wrong interpretation. I always say with any song, it's however the song can serve you. You know, but of course, I have my own interpretations and my own views on the song. So yeah, it can be interpreted, I guess, as, well, the title, why I chose that title was because The First Disciple, to me, if you think about, of course, it's a very religious term, but because it mostly relates to a prophet. But if you think about every human being and sort of who is your first disciple, who is like the first person to believe in you, and in a way, like, that's yourself, I guess. Or better said, I think it should be yourself. There should be sort of self-acceptance to be found that makes you, I guess, yeah, be okay with yourself, be happy. If that's not there, maybe there's more of an urge to go looking for that somewhere else. So, I mean, that song deals with topics of fame and all that. It can be interpreted as being sung from a sort of inner voice.
I think it harkens to, sorry, not to step on you, I was just going to say, I think it harkens to the versatility of that song, because I think what's interesting is that, so one could argue this is a challenging song to release first because it does have so many different facets to it. It's not one singular thing. I feel that's a strength. I know some might find it confusing, but I think it kind of speaks to what you're saying. Like, someone's going to listen to this and have gotten something completely different.
I hope so. I mean, that's sort of, yeah, that's what you hope as a songwriter, I think. It's like a good song is, I guess, a song that can be claimed in a way, like, as being your song as a listener, more than whoever created it.
I want to ask about another song, but specifically, like, the sound and the textures, because there's your song Fascination, and I feel like what's interesting with this one is that even though it has, like, kind of like this soft kind of like mellow vibe to it, it does soar and it does progress. And I feel like this song is an example of you opening your sonic palette a bit more. And I remember when I heard it for the first time, my thought was like, oh, he's willing to go into different places. Like, he's willing to kind of go into an area that we as people wouldn't expect. And when I bring that up, on reflection, is that how that song feels to you? Like, does it feel like a change in a way?
To be honest, not really, just because it was written in the exact same way I always write songs. So it's
really,
it's just what you hear, of course, in a recording is it's basically that's the final step, you know. It's recording that song. It's making decisions about the production. But the song in its core is I see very, very, I see no difference in writing that song for example, The First Disciple. Sonically in the studio, yeah, it sounds weird. I catch myself often saying it just felt right, all those things, but it's really the case. Like, I really, the best sort of example that I can give is we don't have like this whiteboard in the studio with the keywords written on it, or, you know, like I don't brief the musicians or the producers before we start working. We sort of, I think that was the whole point of especially of this album, to sort of get into a flow and see where we end up and what feels right. And in the end, I think the songs are very well connected, but they are quite different from each other, but they're also very well connected sonically, I think. But that's, I don't know, it wasn't planned or anything.
Well, in relation to that song, right, and I think this probably is indicative of the album, because I guess a better way to describe it is like, because I love analogies, I feel like that song is an example of when a painter has a very distinct set of paints that they use, and then this is when they flush different colors together, and they even use different paints, and it's almost like an expansion of their abilities in that sense. Like, I think Fascination is an example of you having more colors to play with. And does that even sound wild to hear? Like, does that sound even like a little bit beyond what you expected or intended?
No, it's a compliment for sure. Yeah, it's weird, because it's weird to sort of experience it in that way myself, because in my mind, there are no boundaries. There are no, like, there's not a single thing that keeps me sort of, there are no walls around my creative process, at least none that I am consciously aware of.
That's beautiful.
It's also why I guess sometimes it's confusing, or my songwriting gets confusing, where it's difficult to market it in a way, because it's not this conceptual thing. It's not like, let's say I would take the whole Oriental thing or Arabic influences as a more if I would have a more of a conceptual approach, then I would make an entire album of those songs, you know, and it would be way easier to I guess to market it or to talk about it, because then it's like, okay, it's clear, it's just one thing, it's just like, right, all of these songs have a similar, they live in a similar world in a way. But that's just not how I write, you know, that's just not how I'm able to create. It's also, I guess, not who I am in a way. Like, there are many different influences within me, so it's very difficult to I guess set boundaries around them, or if that makes sense. Let's take Fascination as an example. A song like Fascination, yeah, just sort of when I wrote that, it didn't feel different, because there never was sort of a boundary in my mind, like I cannot go there, you know what I mean?
I do have to say I very much appreciate your candor, because I think what that speaks to is honestly what people have reacted to in your music, which is interesting, because I think at the core of what you're saying is that the music exists in relation to what you want to make and who you are. But the weird thing about marketing music is that so much of it has to be a pointed thing of like, this is me, this is who I am. And I feel what's powerful about your music is that it doesn't always feel that way. It's more so like, here are some, like, this is what's interesting. I have the album on my phone, your first album, right? Because I wanted to point this out, like the Spotify. And I'm looking at the track list, and on reflection of what we're discussing, right? Going from like Habibi, Sun May Shine, to Tummy, to Chambers, like sonically, like those four songs, it's kind of crazy that it works. Like, it's, by the way, Sun May Shine is an incredible song. And I hope you play So It Goes live next time you're here too, because I love that song.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's I guess, yeah, and I guess maybe for some people it's like, it's not the experience they want to have when they listen to some, to an album, because they want to stay in one world, or, but like, yeah, like you said, like it's I also just think that in general identity is this, it's too, there's too much focus on that, in the sense that I think a human being is ever changing, and you're always evolving, and it's very healthy to realize that your identity is basically just this accumulation of so many things, and
I do understand what you mean with that, because I keep bringing it up because it is relative, but when we first met, I remember I had a lot of fascination about that in relation to identity. And my takeaway from that talk and living with your music more was like, how for me, as someone who's not part of your culture and like has been around your experiences, I think the fascination comes from like, you know, almost me being an outsider in a way. But I think what I was reminded of talking to you is like how that's just your state of being. It's not something you're trying to, it's not a coat that you're putting on. It's the actual skin that you live within.
Yeah, in a way, I think it's just healthy for everybody to take that step back and like to meditate and to feel that they are, prior to everything, a consciousness, and they are experiencing everything within that space. And even their perceptions about their own identity, they all sort of play within that space of consciousness. So I don't know, it's like I think it's healthy. Yeah,
but before we wrap, I wanted to bring up something else, and again, thank you for your candor. I appreciate you, you know, entertaining me and exploring these thoughts on such a deep level. It's very much appreciated. The last time I saw you is when you played this venue in Brooklyn, National Sawdust, and I want to say that was like 2019 or something like that. But something that stood out to me at that show, I'd seen you before, but I was really mesmerized about the tone of the room. And I mean, like, the people being quiet to the point where they were paying attention, people humming to your guitar chords. Like, I remember people humming along to Habibi and not even necessarily singing the lyrics, but like singing the melody. And you brought up being a fan of music. You've been to shows. You know how the environments vary. And I do know there's people who are going to your shows as a social thing. I'm sure of it. But there is this element where I could tell people are allowed, they feel like they're allowed to go into their own world and kind of just, you know, mm-hmm. be present. Okay, so I'm glad you recognize that. Okay, so the reason I bring all this up, how does that feel for you? Because what we're describing here in this type of context, it's very unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something I'm very aware of, and therefore I feel a tremendous responsibility to those people, basically, because I realize it's not like your average rock and roll concert you go to, where indeed it's more of a social thing, or maybe like having a good time kind of thing. There are people indeed who want to go deep, I guess, and uh, who for whom it's a very, yeah, it's like, I don't know how to say that, like, without sounding like I'm patting myself on the back, but yeah, I don't know, but it's an energy that I feel when we play, so I recognize it, and it's also often the case that people come from afar to see the concert, so because we aren't playing everywhere, but anyway, yeah, so I feel a big responsibility to give it my all, to give it my best.
It's well put. And sorry, just one more thing. I was going to say that, you know, Belgium is very unique in regards to music, I feel like, the music scene. And can you tell me something you value or appreciate about having Belgium as a home to create music and build a career in? I do feel like, I'm thinking, like, I love the fact that it's a country where you have someone like Collet, there's Dutch Norris, there's Balthazar, obviously, Jasper, who's amazing. Compact Disc Dummies, like all these people, and you. I love the fact that you all exist in this one place. Sylvie, I mean,
Belgium. Yeah, it's. I don't know. I really don't. I had this conversation with a journalist a couple of days ago in Paris, who said, because I also, he asked a similar question, and I was like, yeah, I don't know, like, hard to analyze, I guess, if you're within it. But he said, like, he referenced to Stromae, and he said something like, I cannot imagine him, for example, being a French artist. And then I understood him in a way, like, and indeed, that he couldn't have been a French artist. What is it about Belgium? I don't know. There's another band, Deus, who meant a lot to music in general. They influenced a lot of bands. It's something about, I mean, I guess there's something in Belgium, there's like a love for surrealism, for weird stuff, for, it's like this super small country where I guess nobody that starts making arts believes that they will get any attention in a way, which maybe makes them just make precisely what they want to make. Maybe it has something to do with that, but I have no idea. I'm just guessing at possible, because I get that question a lot. Like, and I do recognize that there is a lot of good music, a lot of good art in general coming from Belgium. But I have no actual explanation for it.
Well, I do appreciate you doing that, and I very much appreciate your time. And yeah, thank you for this. Truly, thank you for being so generous.
No, thank you for having me. I enjoyed talking to you again.
Thank you so much for checking this out. Be sure to subscribe to The New Exchange via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you stream podcasts. Until next time, thank you for listening.